Thank you, Joel. As Joel pointed out, we're going backwards in the Gospel of Luke today. Last week, we were in 22 through, I think it was 33 or 34, and I think after that message, I kind of realized that we needed this passage, that I should have preached on this in order to give you a little bit more context for last week's sermon. So thank you, Joel, for pointing out my mistake. And I did want to come back. I realized after that I did want to come back and deal with this. Last week, the main topic, the main issue was worry. You know, when you get into Luke 12, a lot of it on the tail end that we looked at last week was about the fact that, you know, we struggle with worry. And the message that Jesus was trying to give to his disciples and also to those who are listening is, if God provides all these things for you, if he takes care of the lilies of the field, if he takes care of the birds of the air, then how much more should you expect for him to take care of you? And if we really do believe that, it does alleviate worry and concern and anxiety. The part that I missed that I did want to come back to is this section in chapter 12, verse 13, where he tells a parable to lead that off, where he is essentially talking about money. If you have your Bible, if you can turn to it, and if you can follow me along in it, we're going to be accessing it a couple different times. And like I said, what Jesus is focusing on in this entire section is wealth and the negative consequences, greed. There was a poll that was done years ago, basically asking non-Christians or people who don't go to church what their complaints are about church. And there were a lot of different things listed. I could give you the top five, and all five are kind of scary. Number one was money. You know, most people didn't go to church. Their biggest complaint was, they said, church is essentially all about money. And whether that's true or not in any particular church, I mean, we can make arguments about that. But in a lot of ways, it makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, that's the way we talk about everything. For instance, you have a football player who plays on a really successful team, becomes a free agent, he signs with a terrible organization, bad team, goes from good to bad. What do we say? It's the money. I mean, that's what it is, right? Politician decides that he's going to vote in a different way than his constituency wants him to, or votes in a way that is incongruous with something that he had said earlier, and he tries to explain it, tries to talk about why he decided to vote this way on this particular issue. What do we say? It's the money, right? I mean, so many things kind of boil down to money for us. And in our culture today, in our society, what do we say? We say money talks, right? Or if you want to find something out, if you want to find out why someone is really doing what they're doing, what do we say? Follow the money. Exactly. I mean, you guys get it. Money's a big deal. Jesus understood this. Not that he knew that all, well, he did know all this was going to happen. But Jesus is very interesting. He ends up talking more about money than he does about hell. And I think that's something that should resonate with us. Money is an important issue that we cannot ignore. So today, like I said, we're going to be talking about greed. And as we look through it, as we look through this really short parable, we're going to see first the nature of greed. We're going to see the power of greed. And then we'll see the problem with greed. So we'll see the nature, the power, and then the problem with greed. So first, we start with the nature. Go back to verse 13, and we find out that this whole parable is told because someone in the crowd gets up and asks Jesus something. It says in verse 13, someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to a man, "Who made me a judge or arbitrator over you?" And he said, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully, and he thought to himself, 'What shall I do, for I have nowhere to store my crops?'" So that's kind of the lead-in or the introduction. You have this question that's posed. This man has come to Jesus because something has happened that he deems to be unfair. And Jesus essentially says, "Well, why are you coming to me about this?" You know, usually those disputes were brought to a legal judge, or they were brought to a rabbi, a religious leader, and they would make a pronouncement, and they would kind of have to live based on that pronouncement. And as Jesus kind of says that, he gives this warning. He says, "Take care." He says, "Be on your guard." And that's a very important warning for us. You know, it's this warning that for all of us, we need to be vigilant, constantly vigilant. against all sorts of covetousness. And greed is the one that he happens to be talking about here. But it's this challenge and this reminder that all of us have to be vigilant. And you know, that's one of the things that we see right away is when we talk about greed, most of us think it's relatively simple. Most of us think that essentially greed is one of those things that you know it when you see it, right? So for instance, if you walk down the street and you see someone who's dressed a certain way, yeah, greed, right? Or they drive a certain car, greed. You know, they live a certain life, not greed. You know, it's one of those things we think that essentially if we were to see it, I mean, we would be able to tell. No, or you read about people and you should be able to tell. For instance, maybe you read about some CEO who's climbed the ranks and you read about the fact that you know he's made all these sacrifices, he's neglected his family, he's made all these questionable choices. We would look at that, greed, right? I mean, it seems like a very simple thing. But here Jesus is warning, he's telling people to be constantly vigilant. But he's not talking to the business leaders of the world. He's not talking to the CEOs. Matter of fact, a lot of people pointed out that Jesus is talking about money here in this particular chapter to people who are poor. And you know, it's important to know that because greed is not about having lots of money. Greed is as hard as about wanting lots of money. It's about loving, it's desiring money. And that's one of those things that greed can affect those who are rich. It can definitely affect those who are poor, and it can affect all of us in between. Greed isn't just one of those things that if you see it, you know it. Every single one of us wrestles with it and struggles with it. And so what is it? I mean, essentially, when we talk about the nature of it, what is it in a nutshell? Well, we could talk about it in a couple different nutshells. We can look at it through a couple different prisms or perspectives. One way you could say it is you could say greed is when money or the pursuit of wealth, the pursuit of possessions, greed is when it controls you, when the pursuit of money, wealth, possessions, when that controls you. And we see ample examples of that, right? You know, we have examples of people who, you know, money and the pursuit of money controls them so much, they become workaholics. All they care about is working. You know, they measure their wealth in terms of, or they measure their potential for wealth in terms of how hard they work. And so there are people who work not just 8-hour days, work 10 or 12-hour days. There's some people, I remember when I was younger, I read this book on successful people, and it was back when I was in business school back in college, and one of these studies done said the most successful people in the world in business field typically sleep about 4 to 6 hours a night, and they do these kind of phase, I can't remember what the term is, but they some of them have done these things where they sleep in phases. So essentially they would, every 4 or 6 hours, they would sleep for half an hour. And that half an hour would be this, you know, really deep sleep, and they'd get up, they'd start working again, then 6 hours down the road, they would sleep again for another half hour to 45 minutes, they would get up, they would work again, and it was this phasal sleeping. I tried that once, and it was horrific. I did it for like 3 days, and it was a terrible experience. I remember being up at like 2 in the morning, thinking like, what am I doing? But you see people that it absolutely controls them. You know, it controls everything and all the details in their lives. If they're not working, they're not truly living. We see it in other areas. We see how money, the pursuit of wealth, controls people. You have people who lie, who cheat, who steal, and the entire reason why they do it is to amass wealth. It's the pursuit of money. I've seen situations of families affected by fathers who have a pursuit of money that controls them to where they have gambling addictions. I know one particular family that I knew a long time ago where the father was, the pursuit of money, of wealth, controlled him to such a degree that almost like clockwork, about once a year, he would disappear for a week. And initially his family wouldn't know where he was. But over the years, they began to realize where he was. Once a year, he would collect whatever savings, whatever money they had. He would go down to a casino, which was, at that time, it was stayed away. And basically, for a week, he would gamble whatever the family had, hoping to amass this fortune. Greed is when the pursuit of money controls you. I've met people who, they may not go into a gambling hall, but they religiously buy lottery tickets. You know, and they live their life around this fantasy about one day striking it rich. You know, greed is when the pursuit of money, the pursuit of wealth, the pursuit of possessions, when it controls you. And again, that can be very overt, very obvious, could be very subtle. There's very subtle ways in which these things work. Sometimes in very subtle ways, we are controlled in our decision-making, right? We make decisions not based on what is good for our family or our spouse or my health. We make decisions based on what's going to get me the most money, what has the most potential to build wealth. Other times, again, it's much more subtle. Sometimes it controls us because we worry. You know, we worry about wealth. We worry about gaining it. We worry about losing it. And we realize over time that it really does have its grip on us. In another way, it can control us because we may not worry about it. It may not direct our decision making, but it's in our fantasies. And again, that's, you know, I've known people who they don't just buy lottery tickets; they live the fantasy. You know, they buy it and they think, "What would I do with this money?" Matter of fact, I actually knew someone who he was so into this illusion of possibly winning the lottery that he actually had an entire process worked out if he did. So, and I asked him one time about that. He said, you know, well, if he ever were to win it, he had this entire plan. The first thing he would do is he would go out of the country for a period of time. And the reason is because, you know, immediately when you win the lottery, there's this big hoopla, and that's where usually people who've won the lottery say that's where family comes out of the woodwork, people come out of the woodwork, and then you have all these demands, all these things. He was saying he would leave the country for 6 months to a year just to, like, let all that, you know, so he wouldn't have to deal with it. Then he would come back and he would first purchase this, then he would purchase that, then he would begin to live like this, then he would do this with his life, he'd make these changes. And as I began to listen to him tell me about it, there's a part of me that thought, how long have you been thinking about this? I mean, it was detailed and it was deep. You know, greed is when money, the pursuit of wealth, the pursuit of possessions, you know, where it controls you. And that's one of those things that hopefully, in a realistic way, each of us can notice, but sometimes we don't. And I think that's one of the reasons why we need to be vigilant about it, why we need to be careful. Another way you can put it is in one way, it's when money, wealth, possessions controls you. I think another way that the Bible puts it is it may not be when it controls you necessarily. The Bible talks about money and talks about greed in terms of idolatry. And idolatry means the things that we desire, the thing that we love the most. I mean, that's essentially what an idol is, the thing that we are most in allegiance to, that we give ourselves to, that we adore, that we desire, that we need the most. And so, you know, greed is essentially when the pursuit of money, the pursuit of wealth, the pursuit of possessions, when money and possessions, when we begin to love or desire those things too much. Now, again, what is too much? Again, that's a little bit harder, but obviously, we know situations. You know, the obvious ones are when someone is willing to lie, cheat, or steal, or hurt others. Then that's obvious. We see that they love and they desire money, wealth, possessions so much that they don't care what God thinks. They don't care what God says about those things. They don't care what society says about those things. They don't care about the people that they're hurting, the people that they're cheating. And we see that love and that desire, that need, has become an over-desire. It's become an inordinate love, you know, where it begins to push up over and above things. And that's essentially what an idol is. It's something that we love too much, something that we love sometimes more than God. And because we love it more than God, we are willing to disobey the things that God says in order to get it. Idolatry is a very dangerous thing. It's a very scary thing because it's not just an intellectual decision, it's an emotional decision. It's a desire of the heart to say, I want it, I need it. If I have it, it will make my life immensely better. And you see, that's the little whispering of wealth, isn't it? The whispering is, if you have me, everything will be better. It's not. How do I know? Is it because I have amassed a great wealth and I don't? No, I have not amassed a great wealth. You can figure that out pretty quickly when you look at me. I'm not that kind of person. I haven't amassed a lot. Doesn't mean I don't want to, but I haven't. But there's a lie that money says to us, and it turns into idolatry when we believe it. Now, I need to make this note, and this is very important that I say this. There is a common misunderstanding, especially among Christians, that the problem isn't with greed. The problem starts simply with money. It's with having money. Jesus isn't telling a parable saying money is evil. Matter of fact, Jesus says it's the love of money that causes problems, right? You know, in the parable, what's interesting is he tells the story about a rich man who has an incredible harvest. And he has this harvest. So he's done nothing. There's nothing ill-gotten or nothing immoral about the fact that he's become rich, right? I mean, he's a guy who's gone out to the field, he's watered, he's planted, he's cared for, he's tended, and you could even say because of God's blessing, he's gotten all of this incredible gain. There's nothing sinful about money in and of itself. And I think that's an important thing to say, because sometimes we misunderstand and we think that the problem is money. The problem isn't money, the problem is our attitude toward money. And again, it's not fair for us to look at people with money and simply say that they're rich or they have what they have because they've decided to spiritually neglect certain things. Jesus isn't saying that there's a problem with money. And again, that's a very common Christian misunderstanding. You know, that the problem is money. The problem isn't money. The problem is our hearts, when our hearts love and desire money too much. When we find a savior and a salvation in money and not in Jesus Christ. There are plenty of people with money who've gotten it through hard work and who want to be loving, who want to be generous, who take the command to be stewards seriously, and who are honoring God with the way that they use their money. It's unfair for us, especially if we don't have as much, to simply say, yeah, the problem that Jesus is talking about is money. The problem isn't money. It's the over-love, it's the over-desire for. The problem isn't having it. The problem is when it has us. And that's what Jesus is speaking out against. So that's kind of the nature. We talk about it in terms of control. We can talk about it in terms of love or desire, but that's kind of the nature of what we're wrestling with. Second thing that Jesus deals with is the power, and greed does have this incredible power over us. It has this effect on us. It has this way in which it can. I don't want to use the word control again, but it does twist and steer us. Matter of fact, in this passage, we see two different things. The first one we see about the power of greed is we see the greed turns us inward. If you go to verse 17, we'll go to 16. Jesus starts this parable and he says, the land of a rich man produced plentifully. And now from verse 17, listen to this. He uses the words I and my, and I want you to listen to how often he does. It says verse 17, and he thought to himself, what shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops. And he said, I will do this, and I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. If you notice, one of the things that's immediately happened to this man, again, he's done nothing ill-gotten. He hasn't been immoral in the way that he's gained this incredible crop. He hasn't stolen his farmer's land. He hasn't, you know, done all these horrific things. He hasn't sprayed them with these, you know, unnatural chemicals to make them, you know, grow to these great sizes. You know, this blessing of God. But if you notice, what immediately happens is his greed has turned him inward. And greed has this incredible power to turn us inward. You know, for this man, all of a sudden it's what should I do, my stuff. And we see the way that greed has twisted him internally. You know, essentially what's happened in a very short period of time is he's come to see that the wealth and the possessions, the things that are around him are his. In other words, he has disconnected all those things from God's ownership. He has stopped seeing himself as a steward of God, and he has come to see that all those things are, in his mind, rightly His and His alone. And you know, you could say, well, what's the big deal? I mean, we look at wealth that way. We look at, you know, what we have that way. Well, that's a huge problem. You know, the Bible gives us this picture, you know, where you and I, where everything that we have, everything we're given, everything that's in our lives, if it's good, is a blessing from God. It comes from God. That God's the one who doesn't just provide for us, that God is the one who gives us rain when we need it. God is the one who cares for the details, big and small, in our lives. Matter of fact, that's what the next section is about, right? And you see, the minute we disconnect all of our possessions, all of our good things, all of our wealth, all of what we have away from God, it causes these major shifts. If you notice, not only has he cut God out of his picture, not only has it turned him inward to such a degree that God no longer has possession of these things, that God is no longer responsible or a part of these things that he has. If you notice, his world has been shrunken down from his community, his society, to him. What should I do? And if you notice, in a blink of an eye, he is only thinking about himself. He has no concern, and he feels no responsibility for anyone else. Now again, we might miss that because we say that's how people are. That is, in our culture, that is how people are. But that's not what they were meant to be. It's a dangerous thing because what greed essentially does is it turns us inward. You know, there's all these interesting stories to me. I've read a lot about people who come into money, who, you know, whether it's a lottery winner, whether it's an athlete who makes it to whatever professional league they're trying to get to. And for a lot of these, you know, young men who are athletes, for instance, in their rookie year, before they ever get to their team and before they ever start playing whatever sport they're playing, a lot of these leagues, they have these seminars, you know, so they have the older players come in or they have these professionals come in. And some of it is wealth management. Some of it is really, you know, these older players coming in saying, this is what you're going to experience now that you're a professional athlete, now that you're, you know, a wealthy person. And it's interesting when you actually hear a lot of the message from these men who have gone from nothing to great wealth because of their athletic expertise, is they say things like, they tell the younger players this. They say, you know, once you make it, once you have money, and people will come out of the woodworks, friends, family. And essentially what they say is, they say, you have to learn to isolate. You have to learn to cut yourself off, because there's always going to be hands reaching out to you. There's always going to be people there who look like they're in it for your good, who ask for your money to do something that seems really good, and they're essentially all just taking from you. Think about what's happening. You know, even in hearing that, what you're hearing is you're hearing this message of when you become wealthy, isolate yourself. Don't trust anyone. You actually don't have to be told that. What wealth does is wealth turns you so radically inward that all of a sudden the world and life is all about you. And just like this man, you begin to think only about yourself, and your concern for others disappears, and any sense of obligation you feel towards anyone else disappears too. Maybe it remains for your closest family, but you feel no reason to give anymore. You feel no reason to, you know, you... Wealth has this incredible power to make you feel bigger than you really are, to make you think that life is really about you and only you. Wealth has this incredible power to the end. You know, that is spiritually dangerous. And God tells us over and over again that life is not about you. And that's not just for the wealthy, that's for the poor too. Your life is not about you. Your life is about Him, about Christ, about God. Your life is about loving God. Your life is also about loving your neighbor. And if you notice, when Jesus is asked, how would you boil down the entire Old Testament, he puts those two things together, right? He doesn't just say spirituality or the Old Testament is about loving God. I mean, that would sound pious, that would sound beautiful, that would sound right. But Jesus says, here's what the entire Old Testament is about: loving the Lord your God, loving your neighbor. And these two things go hand in hand. What wealth does is what greed does is greed turns you inward, and you no longer have a concern for God, or your concern for God diminishes, and you no longer feel any responsibility or any concern for anyone else. And again, that doesn't mean that you can't be generous. You can be generous, and it can still all be about you, right? You can be generous because people will see it, people will notice, people will say things about you. But when greed turns you inward, even your generosity does not come from a place of genuine care or concern or responsibility towards other people. It's simply one more function of you, one more function of your name, your fame, your importance, you. Greed has this incredible power to do that. It turns us inward. Scary thing is that we're kind of turning inward anyway. You know, sin kind of turns us that way anyway. Greed accelerates it and just makes it much, much worse. But that's one of the ways in which it has power over us. Second way it has power over us is it doesn't just turn us inward. Greed also has the power to push us downward. And I want you to look at verses 19 and 20 with me. In verse 19, it says in the story, in the parable, Jesus says, this man says, I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? Now, if you notice, what is this man saying to himself? He's amassed a great wealth in a very short period of time. And he says, I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to relax, eat, drink, and be merry. I think we mentioned this last week, but I guess what he's basically doing is this ancient version of YOLO. You know, do whatever you want, enjoy all the things you want to enjoy, live pleasures, whatever it is, only go around once. And what you have to realize is this isn't the man in the story. Obviously, it's a made-up story. It's a parable. It's made-up man. But when Jesus is speaking to a religious crowd, which is what he's doing, the assumption is the man is them. Right? So here's a man who is Jewish, who is spiritual, and yet what is he doing? He's living like an atheist, isn't he? Well, what does that mean? I mean, think about an atheist. Atheist is someone who doesn't believe in God. Therefore, if he doesn't believe in God, doesn't believe in a heaven, doesn't believe in a hell, without a heaven, without a hell, the only thing that exists is this world. And so if all that exists is this world, then it makes sense to say, relax, eat, drink, be merry. Makes perfect sense. There's no afterlife, no repercussions, nothing to think about. If this physical world is all that there is, then enjoy everything I can. Make my life as easy as possible. Now, here's a man who is Jewish, who is a spiritual man. The assumption is he may still be someone who goes to synagogue, maybe someone who offers sacrifices, maybe someone who prays, but functionally, he's living like an atheist. He's living as if there really is no heaven or hell, as if there is no God. His decision to relax and eat, drink, and be merry is functional atheism. It's him saying, I don't need to be concerned about God. I don't need to be concerned about the world that's to come. I will do what I can enjoy in this life because this life is all that I believe I'm truly given. And if you notice, what's happening is greed has this power to push him downward, to take someone who believes in God, who believes in an afterlife, and yet he's not living that way. He's living a shallow shell of a life because all he's doing is he's living for the things in this world. You know, all his concern is his concern is with the worldly pleasures, with worldly ease. And if you notice, he's chosen to become blind to eternal realities. And you know, that has massive spiritual dangers for us. You know, to live as if this is all that there is massive, it's spiritually dangerous. You know, the other thing it is? To live as if this is all that there It's not just spiritually dangerous, it's spiritually sad. I mean, it really is, if you think about it. If all that there is this world, if all that there is this life, if all that there is this pursuit to have ease and pleasure and those types of things, it's sad because you know what? Our lives aren't like that. If this is all that there is, and if that's how I'm going to live my life, it makes me sad because I don't have that right now. I mean, for you and I mean, most of us, we're working hard. And if this is all that there is, then we're wasting it. The sand is just slipping through our fingers. And as believers, one of the things that brings us joy in the midst of hard work, in the midst of suffering, in the midst of difficulty, is that one day there will be a time of great reward, a time of ease, a time where we can truly spiritually be merry and rejoice. And that joy, that ease, that pleasure will be much, much deeper. You know, that's the thing, is it's what he's doing, the way he's living as a functional atheist, it isn't just spiritually dangerous, it's spiritually sad. But I want you to understand how powerful that is. You can be someone who you take God seriously, you go to church regularly, you read the Bible, you pray, and yet greed can have this effect where in a functional way you live as if there is no God. And that's a very dangerous thing. So that's the second thing we see. We see that greed has this incredible power. Third thing that I want to show you is that there's a problem with greed. And the problem is relatively straightforward. You could probably point it out. But if you go into verse 20, it says, "But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be?'" And in a very straightforward way, the deepest problem with greed is this. We can love and desire money all we want. We can love and desire and pursue possessions all we want. But at the end of the day, what Jesus says at the end of the parable is, it won't last. Can't take it with you. You know, in ancient Egypt, they used to build these elaborate pyramids and tombs for the pharaohs. And for the pharaohs, I mean, these were huge undertakings. What they would do is they would start preparing them before the pharaoh had even died. And as he got close to his death, they would begin to fill the tomb with riches, with possessions, even with pets that had passed away. And the belief was, you know, they would prepare the pharaoh's body for burial. They would put the body into the tomb. They would seal up the tomb. And the belief was that the pharaoh would essentially cross over to the other side and essentially, quote unquote, come to life. And when he woke, he would wake up and have all his stuff there with him. You know, he could go to his favorite pet who would come and he would play with him. He could pick up his riches. He could sit at this beautiful gold table he had, you know, in his room. He could lay back on his bed that he had in his, you know, and then he can enjoy the things that he had. The sad thing is, whenever scientists or tomb robbers opened up these tombs, all the riches, all the wealth, all the possessions were still there. In other words, none of the pharaohs took any of it with them. Didn't enjoy any of it. That's the way it is for all of us. You can spend your whole life amassing something, spending your whole life building something, building a vast treasure, only to lose it in a moment. Matter of fact, there's a proverb of that. The proverb talks about there's this foolishness to building up wealth only for a stranger to spend it. Right? I mean, that's a strange thing. I mean, think about that for a second. You know, you spend your whole life working for something and it's not even going to benefit you. Someone else is going to enjoy it. You know, for many, the pursuit of money, the pursuit of wealth provides something. For many, it provides security, it provides protection. And in the end, it doesn't last. One day you're gone and you cannot take it with you. And that's the problem, is you end up living and doing something your entire life that death renders absolutely meaningless. You spend your whole life doing something and in your death you realize it has no value, absolutely no value. Now, we can't end there. We have to ask the question, what is the solution to greed then? And we find the solution in verse 21. In verse 21 it says, "So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. You know, there's, if you kind of pull that apart, what you kind of see is, you know, Jesus is talking about this. Here's a man who has external wealth, right? Who has this wealth on the outside, who, you know, who planted crops and took care of them. And for whatever reason, he had this tremendous harvest. And all of a sudden, he became outwardly, externally very wealthy. Verse 21, what he's saying is that, you know, if you place your value in external wealth, external treasure, then you'll be just like this man. What Jesus is saying and what he's implying is he's implying that there is an external wealth like this man, but he's also implying that there is an internal wealth, an internal treasure. You know, what is treasure? I mean, I think that's a question we have to ask, is what is treasure? Treasure is the thing that when you have it, when you look at it, when you think about it, it's the thing that makes you feel rich. Now, I want you to notice, that doesn't mean that it makes you feel complete, makes you feel safe, makes you feel important. It's the thing that when you look at it, it makes you feel rich. The reason why I say that is in 1 Peter 2, verse 9, God calls us his treasure. He says that we are his people, his own possession. And when he says that, what he's saying is he's saying that we are his treasure. What does that mean? It means that when God looks at us, we make him feel rich. Now, again, that doesn't mean that we make him feel complete or whole, or now he finally says, I have what I want. I mean, he looks at us and he feels rich, which is a really interesting way to think about it. I mean, we're nothing. We're nothing. And yet when God looks at us, when God looks at his church, when God looks at his people, it makes him feel rich. And what Jesus is saying this, he's saying, the only thing that will solve your problem with greed and money and possessions, the only thing that will fix your external wealth problem is if you have, the only thing that will fix that is if you have something internally that you treasure, that is your wealth, that makes you feel rich, that is greater than the external wealth you could ever amass. And the question is, what is that? Well, if you can turn with me, go to 2 Corinthians, and I do want you to turn, I think here is one of those times where I do want you to see this. Turn to 2 Corinthians. And if you go to chapter 8, verse 9, this is in a longer discourse. But I want you to listen to what verse 9 says. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 9. This is Paul speaking to believers. He says, "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that by his poverty you might become rich." You know, essentially what Paul is reminding the believers about at this point is that they have this treasure, this inner wealth. And the inner wealth is this. What you and I have, and this is unique to Christianity, is you and I don't just have a God. We don't just have a deity that we pray to that promises us things. And especially in our struggle with greed and with wealth, the amazing thing is you and I have a Savior who was once rich. He sat on the throne of heaven. He was surrounded by the most beautiful, the most precious things, things far more precious than gold and diamonds. I mean, he had a wealth beyond belief. And yet, this God, this Savior, this Son of Man, he chose to leave all his wealth behind. Why? So that he could come and rescue us. And in doing so, we became his treasure. You know, if you believe that, if you believe that God himself left his wealth behind, that he became poor, that he walked this earth, that he lived, then died for you, that he gave his life for you to win you back, and that he sees you now as his treasure, if you believe that, then he will become your treasure. And the only solution that you have to your greed is to have an internal treasure that is greater than any treasure you can amass here. once he becomes that treasure, you may still struggle and suffer with wealth and greed, but it will never truly consume you. Because in your heart of hearts, you will know that there is something far more valuable. And you know, if you do get to a place where you amass a great fortune, Christ inside your heart, the wealth of all wealth, the treasure of all treasures, will be the only one, the only thing that will allow you, even with a massive bank account and riches beyond belief, he is the only one who will still be able to make you generous. And you know, that's what you and I need. The solution for our greed is not to renounce wealth and money and the things of the world. The thing that you and I need is we need a greater treasure. And the only greater treasure, the only thing that can captivate our hearts, the only thing that can truly control us in a way that is beautiful and that is freeing, is Christ. If Christ gave up his treasure to make us his treasure, then he will become yours. And you know, as we get ready to take communion, hopefully what we can do and what we can learn to do as we take the bread and the wine is we can learn to treasure Christ. We can learn to see Jesus' life, his death, his resurrection as our true joy, as the thing that makes us truly rich. And again, you know, what we have before us is we have simple bread, we have simple little cups of juice. But spiritually, what we have is we have our treasure. If you really know what Jesus did for you, then he will be the great treasure of your heart.